Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, February 5th, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for tuning in. On today's show, Peter Metcalf will highlight the new publication, 150 Reasons Why We Love Alaska. We'll talk with Jim Powell and Beth Kurtula about an upcoming forum on sexual harassment in Alaska. Chief Ed Mercer will give us an update on the Juneau Police Department. Master Gardener Ed Byarski will preview his presentation on dirt. And Allison Smith and Clay Good will tell us about nominating an educator for Discovery Southeast's annual teacher award. Those interviews, national native news, bird note, music, and more right here live and local on a Juneau Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The University of Wyoming has seen a decline in enrollment of Native American students. The new university president set a goal to reverse that by opening a Native American center and hired a Native American program advisor. Yet as Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports, there's not enough money to fund all the interested students who are applying.
Northern Arapaho Chairman Roy Brown says his tribe is growing quickly, 10,300 members strong. And he says 40% of those members are kids.
About 4,000 of our members are under the age of 18, are going to be looking at opportunities for post-secondary education.
Brown says that prompted the Northern Arapaho Business Council to start brainstorming how they could make sure all those kids have funding to attend college.
One of the ways that we're exploring is starting a dialogue with the Board of Trustees to get a tuition waiver for our tribal members.
A tribal tuition waiver is not a novel idea. Eastern Shoshone member James Trosper is the director of the new Native American Education, Research, and Cultural Center on campus. He says lots of states already offer tuition waivers or discounts for tribal members.
Fort Lewis is probably the most notable. There are several other colleges in Colorado that also do something similar. CSU has an agreement. Montana is another state.
Michigan, North Dakota, Maine, Idaho. Trosper says these states often offer them as a way to acknowledge broken treaty agreements. Trosper says the same should go for the University of Wyoming.
Most of the universities have agreements with tribes who had previously owned the land where those universities are now built. And this is a good example of an agreement that could be made because this land where the University of Wyoming sits once belonged to the Arapaho.
In fact, Trosper says the entire southeast corner of Wyoming was originally granted to the Northern Arapaho in the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1851.
Honestly, I have mixed emotions about it.
That's UW President Lori Nichols.
I mean, on one level, I would love to do it because I would love tribal members from Wyoming to feel like they have access to a higher education and that finances are not a barrier for them.
But Nichols says the university's budget is tight after a severe downturn in Wyoming's energy industry.
Part of what we've really not done yet is really a financial analysis, is just to take a look at how many tribal members do we have attending the university, and if we gave some kind of a waiver or discount, what would be the financial impact of that, and could we handle it?
The Northern Arapaho Tribe now intends to round up more data for the university's trustees as they consider the proposal. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards in Laramie.
The Internal Revenue Service says quite a few tribal families failed to take advantage of a large tax credit. A spokeswoman for the agency says if a family qualifies, it could mean less tax owed or a bigger refund. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
The Earned Income Tax Credit is available for families that earn just under $54,000 a year and meet eligibility requirements. The IRS has identified tribal communities as those that often miss the credit. Karen Connolly with the IRS says there are several reasons money is left on the table.
I think it's mostly because they qualify, but they don't know it. And perhaps they're doing the taxes themselves. They're unable to pay somebody to do it for them, and they're just uneducated about it.
Connolly says working families with qualifying children could end up with another $6,300 from the federal government. She says those preparing taxes can get more information from a qualified tax professional, free community tax help sites, or through the IRS website. I'm Gary Ellen Bolt.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com. Support by the Herd Museum, hosting the 28th annual Hoop Dance World Championship, where you can see more than 70 talented native hoop dancers vie for the championship title February 10th and 11th. Details at herd.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 5th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 6 minutes past the hour. Joining me in the studio now is Peter Metcalf, wears a few different hats in our community. Today he's wearing the publisher-writer hat of 150 Reasons Why We Love Alaska. I'm looking at the publication right in front of me, and Peter is here too. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott.
It's nice to have you here. Tell us a little bit about how this came to be, Peter.
Well, in the latter half of 2016, I was contracted by the Lieutenant Governor's Office to help coordinate sesquicentennial activities, the 150th year of Alaska since the Treaty of Cession with Russia. And helping the office, we developed these signature projects, which were like going to be kind of under the guidance and imprimatur of the Lieutenant Governor's Office, and one of them was an idea I came up with, which wasn't original. It was, I saw a Time magazine issued in 2016, July of 2016, and it was 240 Reasons to Celebrate America. And so I patented on that. I thought it was a good idea. And then Kathy Ruddy volunteered to help solicit contributions. And she sent out emails and made phone calls, and pretty soon we had contributors sending in essays, and they had to be 150 words or less. They didn't have to be an essay. It could be photographs. And it all had to add up to 150 Reasons We Love Alaska. And other than that, there was no direction. So of the contributions, it's everything from the beauty and magnificence of Alaska, but mostly it's about the people, you know, incidents, anecdotes, and so on that characterize why they believe, you know, what true Alaskans are, and the warmth and community that they found here in Alaska if they came here, or that they find, as a matter of course, in their life in Alaska.
I'm holding it here in my hands. I don't know, about as thick as a magazine, a New Yorker, or something like that.
Like a Time magazine.
Yeah, exactly, right? Do you have one you can share with us?
Sure. There's, as I said, the limit was 150 words. Some were shorter, and there's a few that are longer. You know, my job was to be the editor and bring it down to roughly 150 words. It wasn't real hard and fast, but one of the ones I like is from Mary Lou Sparks. It's kind of a prose poem. Quiet moments is why she loves Alaska. The hills of Dutch Harbor, covered by tall grass, hiding blueberry-laden bushes, a black bear at Copper Center, moving gracefully through a meadow of wildflowers. The aurora rippling overhead in Fairbanks like a giant theater curtain, a concerto in neon colors. Spring blueberry bushes, filling the forest with their delicate fat flowers, the glory and graceful quiet at the Shrine of St. Therese. That spoke to me. I've had those moments too, and it's pretty statewide perspective, but Mary Lou's been around a bit.
So as a writer and publisher, you worked with, you know, almost 150 probably contributors, right? And say with Mary Lou, for example, did you do artistic editing, or how did that work?
I was an aggressive editor. I don't really recall Mary Lou. I might have cut it down a little bit. I don't know. But for the most part, there's, I think, maybe one person resisted edits out of all the contributors. Most were really happy that I had edited. And, you know, my career, and spanning 35 years now, I've come to realize that amateurs are people who don't want to be edited. Professionals, I mean, the greatest writers you knew had superb editors. Hemingway? Absolutely. You know, so I felt, you know, justified in being fairly aggressive about it and cutting it down to its essence. I kind of cut my teeth on doing brochures, so that's the job when you do a brochure, is to bring it down to its essence. And but there, you know, the people who contributed are almost uniformly proud of their contributions and have been helpful in distributing this magazine.
Do you have another example for us?
Megan Bush Moody. Megan Bush, she grew up across the street from me. I can remember as a girl scout knocking on her door, now a married adult and living in Tinneke. Jeff Bush and Jan Rutherdale are her parents. I'm sure many of the listeners know these people. Her contribution to 150 Reasons We Love Alaska is the memories. Winter is the softness of falling snow while pulling in a crab pot. Winter is the moment the radio clicks off, the overwhelming silence. Winter is a near empty ferry and big waves. The memories that don't make for good stories or Alaska brochure pictures, and therefore are all my own.
All right.
So that's from Megan Bush Moody, living educator in Tinneke now, and a budding writer. I was really pleased to see that come in from her.
Where can people get a copy of this?
Well, Scott, the 150 Reasons We Love Alaska was a really good idea, I thought, and it had great promise in the sense of publishing, but it was collateral damage with the Alaska or the Anchorage Daily News bankruptcy. And the publication was done when word came down that they wouldn't be able to print and distribute it. And so at that point, I sent an email to all my contributors, and they responded with, rather than disappointment, they were like saying, can we send money so it can get published? And I didn't want to be put in that position or put them in that position. So I sought out another publisher, and Dennis Anderson of Wick Communications in the Valley, Wasilla is where their headquarters are. They're now, just by coincidence, publishing the Anchorage Daily News. But he volunteered, and it was pretty much their contribution to 150 Reasons We Love Alaska. I talked to him this morning. He had another 500 copies, so those are coming down to me. If you have a pen, I'll tell you how you can get a copy in the audience, and that is to contact me. Probably the easiest way would be just go through the Juneau Public Market website, junopublicmarket.com, and my email's there. Or you can email independently just by metcom@gci.net. That's metcom@gci.com. And I'll give you the instructions, which are as follows, pretty simple. Self-address a manila envelope to yourself or to your friends and put $2.08 postage. No, $2.03 for one copy, $3.08 for two copies, and I'll put those in the mail for you. It's a simple process for me. If it was three or more copies, I'm sorry, but that requires going to the post office, and I want to resist that impulse. So.
What surprised you most putting this together?
The genuine warmth and sincerity and love of Alaska, and it was interesting to see what that was. And basically, it boils down to love of community. And many of the people who wrote were not born and raised in Alaska, but came here long enough ago to qualify as Alaskans for sure. But that was some of their stories, is coming into a tiny community in the middle of Alaska, and within a few months they're totally a part of it. And then just, there's also several contributions from Alaskan natives that was, from the perspective of not just being born and raised here, but having a heritage that goes back thousands of years. And, it just fit together really nicely. One of my favorites was from our late friend Lyle Hebert. I'm assuming you know Scott, shaking his head affirmatively. Lyle died in about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago. of Lou Gehrig's disease, and he was a local filmmaker. And he gave several reasons. It's under the Lyle's parting thoughts, because by then we knew he was he had passed away. And one of those is the intimate beauty. On a sunny or snowy day, I feel like I'm living in God's cathedral. Nature here is humbling. It keeps me in my place and not stuck in my petty ego. We are guests here. We don't own or rule the place. Earthquakes, volcanoes, blizzards, landslides, moose, bear, deer, wolves, all remind me of my small place in the big picture. Alaska is spectacular, and I've been spoiled by its beauty. It's one of several reasons Lyle left us.
Mm.
And so it was good fun to connect, for me to connect with so many people. And I got to again thank Kathy Ruddy for launching this project and getting so many people from so many walks of life to help respond to it. Anybody who's been in Juneau for any time would know, you know, half a dozen, if not a couple dozen of the contributors, because by nature of Kathy and my friendships, you know, there's preponderance of Juneau contributors, maybe 20% of the total. But I reached out to friends in Bethel and Barrow and all across Alaska and got some, well, it's all good.
What do you hope for the future of this publication and what's next for you?
Well, I'm working on a couple projects right now, but in fact, I was glad to get this and other projects at sesquicentennial out of the way. But I am going to shop this around, you know, be contacting the Juneau Empire and perhaps the Alaska Journal to see if, you know, I'll give it one more chance to see if we can't get this expanded and published as, you know, I think it's kind of ideal for a visitor type magazine and would attract a fair amount of advertisers. It's sort of a ready-to-go publication. So we'll see if anybody's interested in that. In the meantime, you just have to send an email to metcom@gci.net and I'll tell you how to get a copy.
Peter Metcalf, thank you for coming on the show. Anything else that you'd like to share with us today?
Well, I do want to thank some of my colleagues, like Sherry Paul in the Lieutenant Governor's Office. She was a key person in all the sesquicentennial activities, and, of course, the Lieutenant Governor himself and Claire Richardson, but and the people who helped make this publication possible, which were Dennis Anderson and Kathy Ruddy. And Kathy right now would be sitting beside me, but she's in Zambia, Eastern Africa, and visiting her daughter there. So
you've been listening to the voice of Peter Metcalf. He's the publisher of 150 Reasons Why We Love Alaska, 150 artistic contributions of prose, poetry, photography. That talk about why we love Alaska. You can get copies of this by emailing him at metcom, M-E-T-C-O-M, at gci.com?
.net.
.net. metcom@gci.net. Peter, thanks again.
Well, thank you, Scott.
Anytime. Never let go.
good things take time.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 5th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 22 minutes past the hour. Joining me now in the studio is former Representative Beth Kurtula and Jim Powell. He's an assistant professor of public administration at UAS and the organizer of a forum on sexual harassment in Alaska that's happening tomorrow night, which you can be a part of. And I also forgot to mention that Beth will be the facilitator of that forum. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
It's nice to have you. So tomorrow night at 360 here in the KTOO building, I imagine it's free, starts at 5:30. And tell us how it came to be, Jim.
Well, not a new or unlikely topic to talk about or one that we really need to take on seriously. So it kind of fit into the whole Masters of Public Administration training, I think, because we have human resource training, we have human resource administration and all those topics, and it fit in nicely. And we thought that bringing together some experts and some leaders, and I thought it'd be good to have it for this year's lecture series. We have this lecture series that continues to go on that we've had for, I think it was the fourth year, and we thought it'd be a really timely topic. I mean, it's been talked about from the nation's capital to Hollywood to the state here. And it seems like there's really a sea change that's coming, but where does it go? And that's what we'd like to talk about tomorrow night at 5:30. Maybe to talk a little about the panelists, and I turn it over to Beth.
Please do.
Okay. Well, first of all, Beth has agreed to moderate the panel, which is wonderful because she's been a leader for most of her life in the legislature and other administrative and legal positions. And then the panelists, we have two legislative leaders, really, Anna McKinnon and also Ivy Sponholz. And then we have two other leaders, a native leader from Washington, D.C., but grew up in Petersburg, Nicole Hollingstead, and then Kelly Height McGee, who is the head of human resources for the whole university system, and she's in Fairbanks. We're going to fly those two folks in. So we have all women, native leader, or all leaders, and we're going to ask them, there's stuff happening, but where do we go from here? That's the question.
Yeah. Former Representative Beth Kurtula, you'll be moderator.
Yes.
How do you foresee tomorrow night going?
Oh, I'm very excited about it. All of the women are, well, I guess we'd have to be well-versed in the topic, unfortunately, because we are women. But all of the women are leaders in this area. Senator McKinnon worked with, you know, many groups in Anchorage, Stand Against Rape, and other groups to help women who were victims of domestic violence. And then in the legislature has been a strong leader and is currently part of the committee that's trying to write their own new policies on how to deal with harassment. And Representative Ivy Sponholz worked with a lot of nonprofits in Anchorage, now very strong voice for women's issues in the legislature. Kelly Height McGee, as Jim just said, is, you know, the head of HR for the entire university system. She's worked in management for, you know, decades. And Nicole Hellingstad, who was here at Sea Alaska at one point and is now working at the National Congress of American Indians, is also a manager, human manager, person that really has a positive, strong outlook for the future. So in putting the panel together, I wanted women who were leaders, who understood this issue, and who had a vision for how we go forward. We're not going to talk about any specific cases because, not that it's not important and not that so many of us, you know, reading the statistics and looking at it, and from my own, of course, personal knowledge, every one of us, when we reach my age, which is a little over 60, we've had experience with this, if not ourselves, our sisters, our mothers, and we know how important it is, but we're not going to talk about cases or situations. What we want to talk about is how do we use this moment in time to go forward so that women don't have to go through this anymore, frankly. I mean, it's time, and that's a cliche maybe now, but we need to do it. And I'm really proud of the university. I'm proud of the legislature for struggling and going forward. And this is a time when people can come, they can hear what these experts have to say, and they can add to it. We're going to take live questions and from the audience and online, and it's just a great, I think, opportunity to really add to how do we move forward in Alaska.
I'm sure you are going to discuss this in detail tomorrow, but what are a few things on the top of your agenda that you might like to lead this discussion? What's something that you want to see happen in the future?
I think that one of the most important things, and it's fascinating to me because at least two of the women, and I wasn't talking about it with the other two panelists, have mentioned the huge change generationally, so that with millennials, you've seen a real change in how women are treated, how the acceptance of women in the workplace, and the treatment of equals. So I want to discuss that. What's different there? Why has that happened? And I also think education is key. And it's key for us all, no matter what age you are, to understand, you know, what is harassment? What is the problem? And how are you sure to treat people with respect? And how do we assure that in our schools and our churches and our homes?
Who do you think should watch this or attend
Everyone.
Tomorrow? Right.
Well, actually, <Everyone. laughs> I'm teaching a class in human resource administration right now, and my students are required to watch it that I have in my class. But everyone, actually, I think would be interested. I think everybody that's in an office. I mean, that includes a lot of us. I think across the board, I was just thinking about one thing that Beth was saying. One thing that the university is doing and taking it really seriously is that not only are staff at the university required to have sexual harassment training, but all of the faculty and all of the students. So we're talking about this really this massive, I don't want to say it's an initiative because it's been going on for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years now in the university. We're really taking it seriously because the statistics are terrible at universities. And so we need to change. But how do we do that? Do we have a new, you know, some attorneys used to tell me, you know, you really can't, and judges would say, you can't legislate morality. But I think training is part of it. And I think maybe regulations are part of it, but we're really looking at a whole culture because it's really impacted every level of society, socioeconomic strata. So how do you change a culture? You know, how do you do that? And I think the first thing is awareness, and that's happening in spades. So I think that now I think we're over the hump, but now what do we do? What are the effective things we do to really change the culture?
Beth, I know you really want to focus on the future and where we go and not talk so much about the state of things. But if I may, what are a few things that we may still not be aware of that are happening in offices, in workplaces, in media today? Did anything come to mind that bugs you?
You know, I feel really happy that we're seeing women come forward. I think that one of the things that we have to understand is that that's not an easy thing, and that people may think they're joking or that they're being, you know, friendly by touching someone. It's those kinds of things that you've got to take a look at now. Take a look, step back, and think, you know, if I were in that other person's position, would I really want that? Would I want to have that? That's on a low level, but that's on every day, right? Every day you could be more thoughtful. But that goes right on through. I mean, I don't think I really shock easily. And I was pretty shocked by Harvey Weinstein. I mean, we are not going to talk about cases tomorrow, but just today, it is a shocking time, even for me and even for having gone through, you know, the era where when I was in law school, my professors were their first women in their classes. And in my school, we were only 25% women. But now, my law school is over 50% women. So it's things like that that I think. And frankly, seeing women leaders and having mothers who work and having mothers that come home and talk about what's happening, I think that all influences so that then, frankly, finally, culture changes, and hopefully this is that time. This is that time when we can influence that change, and all of us can step back and respect one another.
And tomorrow's forum is going to help sculpt
it
that
change.
It
hopefully helps. I so come be part of it.
I think it's a, you know, it's a piece of it. You know, I forget her name, but it was a business leader that said she was interviewed after all this stuff was coming out in Hollywood and in Washington, D.C., and she said, what really has to change, because men are still in leadership positions dominantly, men have to be part of the change. They've got to start saying to other men, this is inappropriate. That was inappropriate what you said. So I think that that's part of it. It's not just women changing. I think it's men changing and us standing up and saying, that's just not right in what you're saying. And so we've got to change our behavior in a big way and start talking to each other. The ones that aren't doing the sexual harassment need to stand up and say that's not right.
And, Jim, what can we do as men to help women get in more positions of power?
Well, I can tell you.
Appoint them.
Yeah. But I can tell you one thing that's happening at the university. When I was in my program, the MPA program in the 90s, 75% of the people in the program were men. Now it's over 75% women. So in this state, I don't know if it's a national trend, but at least in that graduate program, and actually natives are a significant percentage of those that are enrolled in the program. So I think that's part of it, is training. Education. I'm a teacher, so I believe in education, but I think that's a big part of it. But it's also the culture and conversations that we have. I think we have to be supportive and change our language and our attitudes about these things.
That's the voice of Jim Powell. He's the organizer of tomorrow night's forum on sexual harassment in Alaska. How do we move forward? It's here at 360 in the KTOO building. It's free. It starts at 5:30. We've also been hearing from Beth Kurtula, who will be tomorrow night's moderator. You said it's going to be live streamed. Who's going to host that? Are we at 360north.org?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that's at www.360north.org.
So you can watch it there live.
Right.
Starting.
And actually you can chat. There's a part of that screen where you can chat in questions.
Okay, or you can come and be a part of it. And did you say there's going to be time for questions, Beth?
Yes,
okay.
There will be significant time for questions live from the audience or online.
Okay, if somebody wants more information, where can they get it?
They can call me at 209-5676, Jim Powell.
All right, thank you both
thank
so much
you.
For coming on the show.
Thanks
Is there
for
anything
having
else?
Us.
Yeah,
Very
anything
much.
Else that you'd like to add?
No, I just look forward to being part of this important thing that's happening in our culture. And finally, I hope ending sexual harassment and assaults. I think that it's been a long time coming, and it's ready for our society to change. Thanks.
Tell me it gets better in time. You say I'll pull myself together, pull it together, you'll be fine. Tell me what the hell do you know, what do you know? Tell me how the hell could you know? Hold your head up and be strong. 'Cause when you fall, you gotta get up. You gotta get up and move on.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 5th, 2018, about 20 minutes until the top of the hour. Joining me in the studio now is Chief Ed Mercer and also new Lieutenant Jeremy Weske here from the Juneau Police Department. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Oh, thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. Chief Mercer, What's on the whiteboard right now? What are y'all thinking about?
Well, some really good things recently. Within the last week, we just sworn in three new police officers. As in my past talkings on this show, I talked about our recruitment and retention, and we're working pretty hard on trying to achieve that. But we sworn three new officers, two of which actually live here in Juneau, and one of the individual was a lateral hire from Salt Lake City after 20 years working on the street in Salt Lake City, Aaron Landry, and the other two is Ron Schreiber, who we actually took from the Lemon Creek Correctional Facility, worked there for about 6 years, and born and raised Joe Payden. One of our first officers, I would say, who graduated from Thunder Mountain High School.
Okay, and with these three new officers, I suspect they'll be all around the city. But what's their first beat going to be like?
Well, as we speak, Officer Landry is currently over in Sitka at the Department of Public Safety Training Academy. He'll be over there for 2 weeks. He's going through a recertification academy that laterals go through from out of state. But our other two officers are going to be going to the Public Safety Academy in Sitka at the end of the month. So they'll be over there for 14, 15 weeks. And when they get back, they may have a little bit of a break, and then we'll get them on the street with a field training officer for another 14, 15 weeks.
This must be very fulfilling because I know recruitment is high on your list.
It is. It's always rewarding anytime we get it to that point, and having them actually sworn in is an achievement on all parts of the agency to get these officers in and hired, which is very challenging.
Lieutenant Weske, tell us about your path. You've been in the department for how many years now?
Getting close to 12 years now.
Okay. Tell us about it. Have you enjoyed your career?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I started in patrol just like these new guys will. That's where everybody starts out at. And then went and worked in the drug unit for a little while. Promoted to sergeant from there. And now, just recently, promoted to lieutenant.
And what are some of the main responsibilities of a lieutenant?
My current spot, I'm the lieutenant of special operations, so I supervise the criminal investigations unit. Those are the detectives that handle the high-level cases. And then I also supervise the drug enforcement unit, and as the name goes, they work on drug crimes.
Okay. Now, you happen to have gone to college, is that right, and then joined the department?
Yeah, so I was born and raised here in Juneau, left to Minnesota for a while, went to college there, came back when I found a job opening here, and then started working, and here I am.
And what, if I may ask, motivated your switch into law enforcement?
It was always something that interested me. I had worked for the police department as a when I was in high school. I can't remember exactly what age I was, but worked there, went to the Explorer program, was involved in that, and then I was looking for jobs back here in Juneau because I wanted to get back close to family, and saw this one was open and figured I would go for it.
Okay. Now, Chief Mercer, does an individual have to have gone to college to join the department?
No, they don't. The requirements is that you just be 21 years of age, have a high school, graduate from high school, or have a diploma of that kind, and it's not one of the requirements to become a police officer.
Okay. Let's see. You told me you might have some preliminary crime statistics for 2017.
So it is preliminary. We, on a monthly basis, look at our uniform crime reports and see how we're doing. And there's like seven or eight different specific types of crimes we look at, from assaults to burglaries to thefts. And preliminary reports looks like if we stay on par, we're gonna be about 6.1% higher than the year before, which is actually less than what we thought we were. The first half projections look like we were going to be a lot higher than that, but the second half is looking a little bit lower. So, yes, we have increases in those particular crime areas, but I don't think it's going to be as high as what we thought it was going to be.
And I said 2017. I guess these are for 2018. Is that right?
No, they're 1 year behind.
Got it.
So
okay.
We capture 1 year behind on there, so they will be 2017s.
And what are the highlights? It might not be the right word, but
two of the areas that continue to show a upward trend, although I think every particular category on Part 1 crimes, which range from homicides, rapes, robbery, aggravated assault, burglary, theft and larceny, vehicle theft and arson. The only one that's not showing an increase is aggravated assaults. But the two areas that are very concerning when it comes to our community is burglaries and thefts that continue to have a really upward trend in crimes that we are responding to in the community.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, warming shelter across the street here in the Willoughby District.
Warmer shelter couldn't come at a better time with all the cold weather that we've been having this winter. It's been well in the low teens, and it seems to be working. It seems to be working really good. From my understanding, with talking to other city officials on that is being used quite well. We're participating with them and helping people over at the warming shelter, especially in the mornings, of going over there and just making sure we show a presence for the safety of the people over there. For the most part, it's looking like it's working out and doing really good. And it's nothing better to be able to have a place to be able to send people to get out of the cold weather.
Any idea on about how many people are using it per night? I'm sure it varies with the temperature, but
my understanding capacity is close to 30. And it varies from depending on the night. I've seen reports as high as 28, upward 30, almost near capacity. So it's being used.
Okay. I wish we had more time today, gentlemen. Is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners? You mentioned something about testing.
So we have a testing that's coming up this week on Wednesday. We ramped up our testing for police officers to 4 times a year, and if we get batches of people coming in, we'll just continue to open up testing dates for people wanting to become police officers. And I'd just like to get a plug out there on, you know, if you're local and you want to be part of a great police department to serve a great community, come out and test. You go to publicsafetytesting.com for that information.
And that's this Thursday?
Wednesday is the testing date.
Okay, so the day after tomorrow. And this is for anyone who's thinking about a career in public safety.
Yes.
And that
includes dispatchers. I mean, we periodically have sworn staff positions that openings that come opening. If they go to the CBGA website and look at jobs, we post all of our openings there as well. It's across the board.
Would this be the kind of test that somebody would need to study for, or is this just a test to see if you're a good fit for this career?
Nice thing about public safety testing is that they do provide information to applicants that they could go study for, okay. And that would be, I would really encourage that. And also the physical agility requirements on there to start prepping for that, to be able to pass that segment of the testing.
Okay, and I've found a lot of great information at your Facebook page. Is that a good place, other places they can go?
We go, yeah, our Facebook page is usually up to date as far as saying this is when our hiring dates are and encouraging and campaigning for people to come test for our police department.
Great. Chief Ed Mercer and Lieutenant Jeremy Weske, thank you both for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much.
This is Birdman. In the icy waters of Vermont's Lake Champlain, common golden eyes are getting hot. Months before the woods here glow with migrating songbirds, these perky ducks are already engaged in courtship. One of the male's signature moves is the head throw kick. On the water, he thrusts his iridescent green-black head forward for a moment, then whips it back so that his nape touches his rump and his bill points skyward. Finally, he slings his head forward and makes a high buzzy call while splashing water outward with his feet. This is a genuine turn-on for female golden eyes. Most duck species court and form pair bonds in winter. Goldeneye pairs now bonding across the U.S. will migrate together in early spring toward breeding waters across Canada and Alaska. But he's a rambler. After she lays their eggs, the goldeneye male abandons his mate and parental duties. It's common conduct among ducks. Winter romance can be, well, cold and calculating. Support for Bird Note comes from Audubon Park Wild Bird Food, family-owned and celebrating National Bird Feeding Month. This is when birds need the most help. info@audubonpark.com.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 5th, about 9 minutes till the top of the hour. Joining me in the studio now is Master Gardener Ed Bajarski, and he's going to be talking about a presentation this Saturday on soil. Ed, welcome to the show. Oh, pruning.
Yes.
I thought it was on soil and dirt.
Soil was last Saturday that week I was talking about.
Got it. So this one's on pruning.
Yes. So it's a little early for pruning yet. We want to wait till it starts to warm up a little bit, probably, say, mid-March or so. But, yeah, Saturday, the Master Gardeners are having me talk about pruning basics, what to prune, when to prune, why to prune, how to prune. I'll actually bring in some tools and all that sort of thing. And open to the public for free. So we'd like to see people come in, and we'll talk about when to prune lilacs or not, and rhododendrons, spruce trees, apple trees, cherries, and other sort of stuff. Maples.
Well, that's great, because I usually associate you with food producing stuff. But this is, again, like you said, lilacs, rhodies, spruce, things like that.
Yeah, lots of things that the things that we are growing here in town. Again, we have a good assortment of fruit trees, some of which definitely benefit by being pruned, may produce better. May help. We're trying to help them ripen fruit more. More sunshine would help too, of course. We can't do too much about that. We're hoping we get a better summer this year.
And this is this Saturday at the Mendenhall Public Library, right?
Correct. And roughly 3 to 5 is the whole meeting. I believe I'll be talking kind of at the beginning of that, possibly up to an hour. And I'll actually bring in some twigs and branches and, like I said, the tools. Maybe even talk about how to resharpen those pruning tools that I bet a lot of people have some laying around the house, garage, shop, shed, whatever.
I'm sure you will cover all of this in detail on Saturday between 3 and 5. Can you just give us maybe one of your top tips to gardeners?
The main one really is sharp tools makes your work easier, and particularly for fruit trees that I think people are most concerned about is opening them up so we take out some of the competing branches and let more light into the center of the tree. That helps for cherries and apples to, assuming we have sun again, develop more color and better sugar, so we have tastier fruit also.
Okay. Have you already started starts for your garden this year?
Not. I've got cuttings started out in my cool garage under lights, rooting kiwi vines, among other things, and actually some blackberry starts too. But I have not started any seeds yet. It's about a month away.
Ed, besides coming to see you on Saturday at the Mendenhall Public Library from 3 to 5, where else can people find you or talk to you?
They can certainly call me. I am, if you can find a phone book, I'm actually listed. I have a landline, 789-2299. I do, folks call me with gardening questions. And they can email me, edbajarski@hotmail.com.
And spell Bajarski for us, please.
Bajarski, B-U-Y-A-R. SKI.
In the meantime, you can meet them this Saturday from 3 to 5 at the Mendenhall Public Library for a presentation on pruning. Ed, thanks you so much for coming on the show today.
You're very welcome.
All right.
To do your dirty work, oh yeah. your dirty work no more. I'm a fool to do your dirty work, oh yeah.
Light the candle, put the lock upon the door. You have sent the maid home early like a thousand times before.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 5th, a few minutes until the top of the hour. In the studio now is Sean Isley. He is the executive director of Discovery Southeast, and Allison Smith, first grade teacher out at Auk Bay. And we're going to be talking about Discovery Southeast and nominating people for their annual teacher award. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Nice to be here.
Are you on the board, too, Allison, of Discovery yeah. Southeast?
Yeah.
You've done it. Boots on the ground. You take kids outside. Why is that a good thing?
Well, it's just really great for kids to be able to have an experience in nature that we have. And we have so many good resources around here, too. And I am really happy because I've gotten to get kids out in a number of ways. And I was an outdoor ed major in undergrad and college, so I did camps and things. And then I've taken kids out as a classroom teacher, and I've also, you and I work together in Discovery doing outdoor explores in the summer. And I feel like it just provides kids with a different connection to our natural world, a different passion for understanding the creatures and plants around us, and all gives them good experiences and makes them happy. I think it's good for their little souls and beings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sean Isley, executive director, what's on your radar right now? Are you thinking about the annual teacher award and your probably the auction coming up, huh?
Yeah, we have the teacher award, which is announced at our annual banquet and auction. That's going to be March 10th this year. It's a little bit earlier than normal. And I think we actually even have tickets live already at discoverysoutheast.org. So that's going on. But what's really going on is nature studies in the classrooms. Traditionally, we've done outdoor nature lessons for third, fourth, and fifth graders. And this year, we're doing it for K through 2 as well as third through fifth. So it's essentially a doubling of programs this year. We're in all the local elementary schools, and we're offering the program to all the grades.
All the grades?
K through 5.
Wow. Because traditionally it was first, second, and third, right?
Yeah.
For the most part.
So we're really psyched to be doing that. It's fun to get the little kids out.
And this is something that's free, generally speaking, to the public, minus membership to Discovery Southeast.
Yeah, that's right. PTAs pay for a portion of the program in each school, and the rest is raised through donations, through grants, through our annual banquet and auction, and, of course, through our bookstore out at the Mendenhall Glacier, too.
Okay. I wish we had more time. I could talk Discovery Southeast all day.
Yeah.
Annual Teacher Award, this is where a teacher who's been, tell us about it.
Yeah, so I was the lucky recipient of the Teacher Award or the Educator Award in 2015, and the Educator Award is open to any educator, and we are currently seeking nominations. So if you have someone that you want to nominate, we just need a paragraph about what that educator has done outside with children that's sets them apart, and you can email Sean, help me if I need this, board@discoverysoutheast.org.
Yeah, B-O-A-R-D.
Yes.
Because you're never bored when you're outside.
Or right. Go to the website, which is?
discoverysoutheast.org.
I'm so sorry, you two. We're out of time. Come back in a couple days, and let's talk more about this, okay?
All right. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you both.